Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The president's men and women were out on the talk shows Sunday talking up a turn from recession. But there are still big question marks out there about a real recovery. My guest today, investment guru John Malden, says we're still in trouble and it may well get worse again, a double dip. On his chart, unemployment goes to 12% and not down to 8% for a decade. 2020, yikes, this hour on Point, tough talk on the U.S. economy with John Malden and a brighter take from the Wharton School's Jeremy Siegel. You can join the conversation. Are you seeing, feeling, an economic recovery yet? What's the new American economy look like to you? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Wharton's Jeremy Siegel joins us in a few minutes, but first, joining me from Dallas, John Malden, investment advisor and market commentator, president of the advisory firm Millennium Wave Securities, and author of several newsletters, including the free and popular Thoughts from the Front Line. He's written several books on investing, including Bullseye Investing. He's widely read and cited by the investment in crowd as the sage of Dallas. John Malden, thanks very much for joining us.
Tom, it's good
Sage
to be
one.
Here. That's an over-the-top introduction.
Well, over-the-top.
You're very kind.
Well, we'd like to get the economy over the top. You're sort of famously bearish. The Motley Fool calls you and Nouriel Roubini perma-bears.
But that's wrong. That's just so wrong.
Well, we'll take your word for that. But you're also a good storyteller. Tell us the story of where you see our economy now, John.
Well, we are recovering, and I think we'll have a slower than usual recovery this next year, and it's going to be the mother of all jobless recoveries. We can go into why I think we're going to have trouble. I mean, just like we went through the last one and we were, you know, the economy seemed to be doing fine, but where are the jobs? I think we're going to have that same problem. In theory, we shouldn't have a double dip recession. And I don't think any of the data is going to show that. Prior to the last two recessions, you could look at the data, the inverted yield curves, the leading indexes. There's lots of things. There's about a half dozen things that you can look at and say, you know, there's a recession. So it was easy for me to say in 2006 there's going to be a recession. And, you know, you'd go on Kudlow or someplace and they'd go, oh, John, you're such a bear. And I'm going, no, the data is telling us there's a recession. The next recession I'm talking about, we're not going to see in the data. So this is a kind of an instinctual call for me, and I readily admit that it could be wrong.
Not going to see meaning you're not going to see it coming.
We're not going to see it coming. I think what's going to happen is that we're still going to be up around 9 or 10%, maybe more unemployment next January, and we're then going to see the Bush tax cuts taken away. And what looks like to be an additional almost 5% on those who make a quarter of a million or more. Now, let's go back and look at the Bush tax cuts. They were two very, very large tax cuts. And they were middle-class tax cuts by and large. What we've seen is a really odd thing happen. The U.S. has far more progressive tax rates than any other developed country in the world. And by that, I mean we tax the rich end more than we do the middle class or the poor end.
Even with our top rate, where it is, it's way below where it used to be in this country.
But I'm not talking about rates. I'm talking about the percentage of taxes that the cohort, the top 5% or the top 10% actually pay is far higher, almost double in the U.S. is what it is in Europe. Europe taxes the middle class.
But, of course, a lot of people would say that's because that's where our income has been in this country, because the income has gone to the top, so the top have paid a lot.
Well, that's true. But then you have a conundrum. If you want to be able to collect a lot of taxes, you have to let the rich get richer. If the rich don't get richer, which is what's happened this last year, then you see the tax collections come down. And one of the reasons we're running these large deficits is that the income tax is down something like 15 to 20%, depending on what state you're in. And
how
so
about
forth.
Putting everybody back to work and letting the middle class get richer, and then harvest what you need to run the country there?
Well, that's a good idea in theory. How do you go about doing that in practice? The only way you do that in practice is you put private businesses to work, because 85% of jobs come from small businesses. Now, the problem is 75% of those rich people that you want to tax with this new, you know, extra 5% surtax, and then you take away the Bush tax cuts, 75% of those people are small businesses. So the very people you want to go out and take their money and create new jobs, and, you know, and we say, you know, Obama came up and said, well, we're going to give you some tax credits. Mm. Those tax credits are chump change to what you're going to be taking on the other end. I think that we could see a real 1-2 punch to the economic body the first quarter of next year that could dip us back into another recession.
So your double-dip scenario is premised on an expectation of higher taxes, of the Bush tax cuts going away as they are scheduled to do and not being extended, and some kind of new taxes surcharge coming here. That's the basis for your double-dip prediction.
Yes, that's correct. And if we have those taxes and we don't see any economic consequence thereof, I'll be wrong. I'll be pleasantly surprised. But if you go back and you look, the economy recovered from what was a pretty serious problem after the last recession of the bubble bursting and 9/11 for two reasons. Number one, we had two very serious tax cuts. And Christina Romer, Obama's chairwoman of the Economic Council of Advisors, mm-hmm. she and her husband did the classic study on the effect of tax cuts and the effect of tax increases. It turns out government spending has, over the long term, almost zero increase in productivity. In fact, it's just slightly negative, but it's one of those things that, you know, putting a 0.1% on a number is kind of meaningless. So it's basically zero. However, tax cuts have a 3x multiplier. So for every dollar you cut in taxes, you're going to have a $3 increase in GDP. Now, what happens is tax increases have this – I mean tax decreases – tax increases have the same negative multiplier. And we're going to take the largest tax increase in history. It's going to have a 3x multiplier in terms of its negativity. We're talking something in the neighborhood then of 7 or 8% of a punch to GDP over a year or two. That's a really hard number to make up when you're at 10% unemployment.
Now, you're assuming that the White House and the Democratic Congress will push for this because they are dry for revenues, because we've got deficit problems. I mean, of course, you know, we ran up a pretty big deficit in the Bush years with those tax cuts, too.
We ran up a pretty big deficit in the Bush years because we had runaway spending by a bunch of idiots that thought that they could buy votes. By the way, I'm a bipartisan critic, even though I'm a lifelong Republican. I think what Denny Hastert and DeLay and all those guys did Rove and Bush enabling them by signing those bills, we wasted a once-in-a-lifetime chance to run surpluses and prepare ourselves for what's going to be a real economic train wreck in the middle of the next decade when Medicare and Social Security expenses really start kicking in, because we're going to need the tax increases then to pay for those bills. And if we use them now, then when we get to the middle of the next decade, we're going to have some real problems. And so, I mean, what I liken it unto is there's a few things that I'm an expert in, and I'm an expert in bad choices. I've made some personal ones of my own, but I've also had seven teenagers and their friends. And, you know, as we all know, teenagers make the easy choice and they make the bad choice. And then eventually they come to the place where they have nothing but bad choices left. So they have to choose the best of bad choices. And we as a country made some very bad choices in the late 90s and early 2000s. We repealed Glass-Steagall. We kept rates too low. We got into a housing bubble. Mm-hmm. We thought we could lend money to people who couldn't pay it back. We ran up the lost the surpluses. We decided that it was okay to fight two wars before you paid for the first one. Mm. I think the tax cuts were a good thing because it helped increase the economy. It really boosted the economy. But we shouldn't have wasted it on government spending.
And did it in the middle of some bad choices there. Alan Blinder writes in the Wall Street Journal today about his case for optimism on the economy. But I'm hearing something not quite so optimistic on your point. I'm looking at one of your unemployment rate scenarios here that has us not getting back down to 8% unemployment until 2020. That's a decade.
Well, that's the negative one. We put three scenarios, and anybody mm-hmm. can go to the website and they can punch their own numbers in. You want to be optimistic? The second scenario was optimistic. The first scenario was probably realistic.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big question still hanging over the U.S. economy with investment guru John Malden in Dallas and in a minute with the Wharton School's Jeremy Siegel in Philadelphia. Let's listen for just a second to White House Economic Advisor Larry Summers over the weekend. This is on ABC's This Week, talking about recession behind us.
Today, everybody agrees that the recession is over, and the question is what the pace of the expansion is going to be. These things happen in stages. First, GDP goes up. That's happened. Then hours that are worked by workers who already have jobs go up. That's starting to happen. Then employment goes up. We got very close to that this month with only 11,000 jobs lost. And then unemployment starts to come down. So these problems weren't made in a month or a year, and they're going to take a substantial time to solve. But we've walked back from the brink. And most professional forecasters are now looking for a return to job growth by spring.
The White House's Larry Summers talking about job growth. Sounds like green shoots there in the spring of 2010. John Malden, how about unemployment? He says, yes, we've stopped having those huge losses. Only 11,000 lost last month, and people paid attention to that. But you, as a Republican, Paul Krugman at the other end of the spectrum, are talking about needing a 250,000 jobs, 300,000 new jobs a month to get back to full employment in this country. How do you see our employment prospects?
Well, there's a couple of problems. Number one, they talk about a 10% unemployment rate. But if you add in what's called discouraged workers, mm-hmm. and that's people who haven't looked for a job in the last 4 weeks. They want a job, but if they haven't looked for a job, they're not counted as unemployed. It's just the way they count things in D.C. Well, all of a sudden, now you're up at 10.5. And once the jobs start coming back, those people are going to say, well, gee, there's jobs out there now. I want a job. And so they get started added back into the system. In addition, you've got 9 million people who are working part-time for economic reasons. That means they want a full-time job and they can't find it. Mm-hmm. So in a rough back-of-the-napkin answer is we have to find the equivalent of 4 million jobs for those part-time people in order to get back to, before you really start hiring new people. Because what do employers do? They give their people that are working for them now more hours before they go out and start putting new bodies into the pews. That's why you – in the statistics, the GDP will be rising. And I agree with Summers that we'll see a rise in the GDP next year. We're out of this recession.
What kind of rise are you expecting? What kind of bump in GDP?
With 10% unemployment and consumer that is increasingly indicating they're going to save more money, we could see GDP below trend for a while in the 2 to 3% range. Now, we've got a lot of stimulus. almost 90% of the last quarter's rise of 2.8, which is going to be revised down again, I believe. Not a lot, but you know, but some. Almost 90% of that was government stimulus. A lot of it's government stimulus this year, and it's going to be for the next two quarters. And that's helping, no question about it. But that stimulus begins to wear off, and not wear off, it goes away. So it's going to take some time, and I think we grow below trend for quite some time. We've just got to work through a lot of problems. We borrowed too much money. We over-leveraged. Consumers are, in fact, reducing their credit card bills. They're reducing their leverage and other banks are doing the same. The good news is for us as a country is that our corporations are by and large in pretty good shape, or the bigger ones. If you go to the small business surveys, though, what you find is that while they say – while the majority of them, you know, 80-90% say we can get access to capital, they do say it's more difficult. But they don't have any real plans to hire. More small businesses than the majority of small businesses are still planning to let people go and not hire. Though the rate of layoffs is starting to drop significantly, and that's a good sign. I mean, to get to the turn, you've got to actually get to the bottom and turn. So you can look and see that things are going to be better in next quarter and the quarter after that. But as the stimulus wears off, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of political will for any more new stimulus, the economy is going to have to start, you know, doing it on its own.
And you're worried that that may see some sputtering, bring on some taxes that the country may feel it needs at some point, and it could be worse. John Malden, standby in Dallas, Texas. I want to get a different view of what's going on, what may be coming from Philadelphia. Jeremy Siegel joins us, professor of finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, author of The Future for Investors. Jeremy Siegel, thanks very much. Welcome back to On Point.
Happy to be here, Tom.
You're predicting, I'm looking here at the Philadelphia Inquirer, 4-5% GDP growth in 2010. The Inquirer says, you know, you're one of those guys who can still make you think that better days are close. How good, how close, and what about John Malden's concern that we could double dip?
First of all, I love John's articles, and he's a great guy in terms of interpreting the data. But I do disagree with him here. I think we're going to see a faster growth than the consensus. I think John mentioned 2-3% GDP growth next year. That's on the low side. Most are saying 3-3.5, and I'm one of the people that say 4-5. Now, people say, wow, you're so high up there. And I say, interestingly enough, given a recession as severe as we just went through, that would be a very slow recovery. If we take a look at the recessions of the 50s and 70s and 80s, we were growing 5-6, 6-7. The snapback was faster. So I'm actually saying no, it's not going to be quite that fast. But we have a very flexible economy, a very flexible labor market. We create jobs when we don't think so. I remember back in 1981. When the unemployment rate was higher than today, 10.8%, people said, "Oh, are we ever going to get back to 4 or 5 or 6?" When all the GIs came back after World War II, people thought another depression. Where we're going to employ these people? And we had one of the biggest booms in our history. So there's a lot more flexibility, I think, in the economy to absorb these workers than a lot of people are estimating.
You know, I've got some communication from our listeners here. I want to put to both of you, Jeremy and John Malden in Dallas. This is from Facebook, and here's Tim. And I think this reflects a lot of people's concerns. He says, I fear both a double-dip recession and high unemployment. He says, our economy doesn't seem to have any fundamentals improving. The recovery has been government spending. That peters out. He says, there's no basis for our economy. It used to be consumer debt drove the economy. Now it's government, taxpayer debt. Either way, this is Tim writing, it's unsustainable. We're looking at a long, hard slog back to real strength, if that ever even happens. You hear all the sort of shades of doubt and concern in there. Jeremy Siegel, first to you, how do you respond to this listener's sort of framework of concern about the fundamentals?
Well, you know, one of the fundamentals that I look at, and I think the data is really remarkable here, is in productivity growth. And that, in the long run, is the foundation of increases in our standard of living. Now, I understand that one of the reasons we've had such productivity growth over the last few quarters is because corporations are squeezing down costs, and they're squeezing out workers, too. I mean, we had a much bigger job loss in the United States, given the decline in GDP, than in other countries in the world. But ultimately, all economists agree that productivity growth is the source of increases in our standard of living in the future.
But productivity in what industries? I think people are scratching their heads and asking.
It's really in all industries. We had a productivity number, first reported was 9% in the last quarter. It's been revised down to 8%. We had 6% in the second quarter. This is outstanding. The long-run productivity growth in the United States is between 2 and 2.5%. Certainly, we can't stay at those levels. But in the long run, it is that productivity growth that drives real wages. And in fact, interestingly enough, for those people working, actually real wages have done a lot better because with inflation low, actually there's been real wage growth. But in the longer run, it is those productivity figures that's going to drive that wage growth.
John Malden, what do you say to our listener who says, look, we ran this economy in consumer debt and now government debt, and he doesn't see the fundamentals there? Jeremy Siegel says productivity is the way. It's the savior. What do you say, John?
Well, I agree that productivity, there's only two ways to make the economy grow, two sources of growth. One is productivity growth, and the other is growth of the population. That's why Japan is in such terrible, dire straits, is their population is shrinking. Mm. So the only source of growth that they could have would be productivity, and with an aging workforce, that's difficult. Now, back to us. We did grow considerably off of the increase in debt. We are now deleveraging, with the exception of the government. The government has stepped in where consumers and businesses are deleveraging. The government's stepping in. That's not a sustainable long-term path. You can get away with it for a year or two, but eventually the bond market jerks your chain and interest rates rise. And by the way, Jeremy, you probably didn't hear early on. The reason I think we're going to go see a double dip is because of the tax increases in 2011. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they said, well, we're going to postpone those tax increases, or we're going to phase them in slowly over like 4 years so that they're just not so large all at one time. Then I don't think we'd have to have a double-dip recession. And so my scenario today is based on what appears to be policy. But some of the readers out there are old enough to remember the old blue screen of death. You know, when you'd be typing longer in your computer and all of a sudden you'd get this blue screen and you couldn't do anything. You couldn't control or delete out of it. Mm-hmm. The only way you could do was to go and unplug the computer from the wall. I mean, you couldn't even turn your computer off. Mm. Wait for about 5 seconds, push it back in. It was one of those, you know, wonderful Microsoft features.
And see what you had, yeah.
And see what you had left. We as an economic body are hitting the reset button, and we're going to have to see what we've got left. Jeremy's right. If you look back at past recessions, the growth coming out of them was much faster than what he's projecting or what I'm projecting. I'm saying this recession that we're in now is unlike anything we've seen since the 30s. This is a deleveraging balance sheet recession. All those others were oversupply and exuberant recessions. And indeed, during the last recession, borrowing never even slowed down because rates were so low, people just kept borrowing and buying. We had a bubble in housing, which drove the economy. Without that home equity borrowing, we would have had 2 years of negative GDP growth. I mean, that's Greenspan and his partners own data. This is not stuff that some blogger's making up. Okay, so that was we're not going to have home equity borrowing driving our economy this time. We're not going to have increased credit card. I mean, we're seeing credit card data for the first time in 50 years is starting to roll over. So we'll grow, but it's going to be a slower growth than what we're accustomed to because the fundamentals are the same. We cannot – here's the problem. You can't go back and look at past data to make any kind of prediction about the future of this year because the past data was based on a fundamentally different scenario. It's not just that the past data is wrong, or you know, but it's misleading if we're trying to use that past data to project into the future. We've almost got to do a complete reset as economists and come back and say, okay, what are the fundamentals going to be driving for us? And when you look at high unemployment, a much higher savings rate, what's going to be persistent 10%, 11% unemployment, dwindling government, deficit spending, that's not a case for a robust recovery.
Let's bring our listeners in here. Jillian in Groton, Connecticut. You're on the air, Jillian.
Hi, Tom. I guess my question or concern is on a more personal level. I recently graduated from a master's program. I've yet to fully enter the workforce as a teacher, and I'm seeing teachers being losing their jobs left and right, openings are closing, and so getting your foot in the door in these hard times, I'm just sort of wondering what is a new graduate to do in this environment, or where could those jobs be found?
Well, are you feeling optimistic or pessimistic when you look out there, Jillian?
Oh, very, very pessimistic. I went back to school, got my master's degree, and in this environment, I mean, there are teachers who have lost their jobs or teachers who don't have a master's degree who would fall in a lower pay bracket.
Yeah.
It just seemed more appealing.
Jillian, let us pick it up. The break is close. But, Jeremy, there's the voice of the American citizen trying to make their way through this, and you hear John Walden say persistent 10% plus unemployment. You can see why Jillian is hardly seeing roses coming up.
Very definitely. And let me compliment Jillian and going into teaching. I mean, that's my profession, too. And, you know, when we take a look at the future of our whole economy is how well we teach our young. And we know we're not doing well on that front. I think that is one long-term structural problem. Let me just say, certainly, state and local governments have been squeezed to death with budget deficits, and they are squeezing teaching and positions. But in the long run, it's people like you that want to teach that I think are our hope for our economy. So, you know, stick with it. Things will get better from here.
Well, easy to say, but she's looking for a job and can't find it. And when you hear 10% unemployment on out, it doesn't sound promising, John.
Let me just say that, to quote Bill Clinton, I feel her pain. I graduated with my master's degree in 1974, and it was tough back in the 70s to find jobs. So the only thing you can do is just keep looking and keep working. I mean, things, you know, that what happens, the reason we all recover is you get 150 million families figuring out how to make their life better. And then as a group collectively, the country comes back.
John Walden, Jeremy Siegel.
I'm optimistic in the long run.
We'll look for that. We could use that. Stand by. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the big question still hanging over the U.S. economy with investment guru John Walden in Dallas and the Wharton School's Jeremy Siegel in Philadelphia. John, Jeremy, let's get some callers here. Laz in Newport, Rhode Island. Laz, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Big fan of the show. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
My question for Mr. Spiegel, and I believe it was John, I'd like to know what planet Mr. Spiegel and Mr. Summers are on. I mean, I live in what is known to be a very affluent town, Newport, Rhode Island, lots of mansions and whatnot. And whereas I used to be an optimist, you know, in the last 2 months, I have seen so many businesses closing, and all this GDP growth and productivity growth, and I fortunately do understand what those mean, figures mean, but we're just starting to feel the wave of foreclosures, and we're expecting within the next 6 months for maybe a quarter of our businesses on our own Main Street to close down. So we're not even thinking, we're beyond thinking how are these businesses going to rehire or what percentage they're going to unemploy. They're beyond that. They're on the brink of closing. And my final question is how can we be out of the recession? And when we have such high deficits, we still have two wars. Nobody's ever mentioned about Social Security. I mean, that conversation has gone out the window. And how can we say we're out of a recession when in reality we're right? We can't count on past data. And we can't count on past data to say we're out of a recession.
Let me jump into that real quick, Tom.
Is that John? John Wallace?
Yes. Mm-hmm,
yes, please.
Yeah. I wrote this last week in my letter. By the way, a quick plug. The letter's free. You can go to johnmalden.com or Frontline Thoughts and just subscribe. But I wrote about the statistical recovery, which I wrote about last summer again. The recovery we're going to see initially isn't going to feel like a recovery. We're still going to have high unemployment. Incomes are going to be difficult to see increases in. But the numbers, because we're getting such low year-over-year comparisons, are going to give us a recovery in the statistics. And it's kind of like 2002. We had a recovery in the statistics before we started seeing unemployment rise in 2003. I mean, remember, in the last recession, they declared the recession over in 2001, 2002. But we didn't start seeing an increase in employment for 16 months. So it takes – I mean, so if they can say the recession is over this quarter – that would say that we're going to see a real rise in a decrease in unemployment sometime in 2011 if we're on that same pattern. Because just like remember, we've got to add 100,000 new jobs a month just to make up for a rising population. Just like the young lady that was on earlier, that she's now graduated and she's putting her hand up and say, "I'm ready to go to work."
Right.
Well, there's 100,000 people like that a month that show up. So just to get back to – just to stay break even next year, we got to create 1.2 million jobs.
Never mind to get back to where the country was in terms of employment.
And that's what I try to show in some of my charts, that we would have to grow. To grow at what Krugman agrees with me. So it's not just some right winger. I mean, it's also somebody on the far left and in this column in the New York Times the other days. We've never grown 300,000 jobs a year, I mean a month, for a year, let alone for 5 or 6 years. And that's why I'm saying that it's going to be unemployment. Now, by the way, one optimistic note. When I graduated in the 70s, it was tough. Japan was beating us. We had high inflation. I mean, at one point, prime rate was 18%.
I remember it well.
I mean, it was a tough time. And the correct answer to the question, where will the jobs come from, is, I don't know, but they will. Because that's what a free enterprise world do. We will go out and create whole new industries, probably in the energy world and the telecom world. We'll create things that will come seemingly out of, left field. And that will, be the driver for the decade. So, I'm an optimist.
Long term.
Long term. But the next few years aren't going to feel fun. It's going to feel like, for different reasons, it's going to feel like the 70s. It's going to feel like we're swimming through peanut butter.
Jeremy Siegel, you hear our caller Laz. I mean, everybody wants to share that optimism, but he looks at the sort of obstacles out there, deficits, two wars, Social Security foreclosures, stores still closing on his Main Street, he says, and he's just not buying it. What planet is this optimism coming from? And it's hard to see through to how this happens eventually.
Actually, Laz didn't mention what I think is the biggest burden going forward. That's Medicare and the whole health care system. And that's really what the tremendous rise in health care costs is what's, you know, actually robbed middle America from the income increases that they deserved as the road to productivity. We can all debate about whether, you know, the Obama plan is going to help on that front or not. But, you know, going when you go out 20 or 30 years, Medicare is 4 to 5 times as important in terms of huge deficits as actually Social Security. I do want to echo, I mean, what John just said. I mean, the last two recessions, the unemployment rate, which is that headline rate, which, you know, dipped to 10%, was peaked 18 months after the end of the recession. Now, we believe that when the NBER gets around to it, they're going to call July, maybe August, the end of the recession. So we still, we got a year to go. I don't actually think it's going to be quite that long, but take a look at other things. I mean, we mentioned the fact that the last job lost was just 11,000. I actually think we're going to get some positive numbers, you know, if not January, February, soon. Challenger, an organization that measures layoffs of huge firms, they have that has come down dramatically. I mean, the shock and those huge layoffs. We even see recovery in the financial sector. Even as an optimist, I have to say I'm amazed about some of these banks repaying TARP. I didn't think it was going to be this early, but that's a huge sector that is repairing.
But that's still a long way from a 250,000 or 300,000 new jobs a month into the economy.
Yeah, I know. For years.
I know, but
as you know, John just said, where are they going to come from? I mean, there are major industries that we've had over the last 20 years, you know, cell phones, the internet, the personal computer. We can go on, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, we didn't even envision these industries that now employ tens of millions of people. So, again, productivity is the key. I'm not quite as fearful as tax increases as John is going forward.
Do you think they're coming? Do you think they're coming? Will the books?
I think they will be coming. I'm going to I'm somewhat resigned to be paying more taxes, but I think I can handle it. I've looked at the Obama tax program. I'm not freaked out. I think.
But Jeremy, let me just
jump in. It can be handled by the economy.
You and I can handle it.
Okay. And the others,
if they don't modify or figure out how to not allow the Bush tax cuts that were heavily on the middle class, you go back to the middle class and you increase their taxes percentage-wise as much as it will be, it's a much bigger percentage of their disposable income than it is for you and me.
Is that a showstopper, Jeremy Siegel? Is that a showstopper, if you agree?
Well, I honestly, you know, and here, you know, I don't want to sound like an Obama spokesman. I mean, direct increases in tax rates on the middle class. In fact, you know, Obama's says, I'm going to raise capital gains to 20%, and I'm going to keep that dividend tax cut off that Bush introduced. I'm going to raise it to 20. I can live with 20% on dividends and capital gains. I want a free small business. We know small businesses create, 80% of the new jobs. We have to make sure that we don't increase burdens on them. I'm a little worried about the health care bill, how much of a burden is going to be on those. We have to free them from overregulation, Sarbanes-Oxley, a number of other things. They are, you know, the innovation, the entrepreneurial spirit brings about gains in employment, new small businesses. We must make, you know, be sure that they are empowered in the recovery that we have.
Well, and that's all well and good, but the problem is the tax cuts. I mean, the tax increases, we already know what the Bush tax cuts were. So that's going to be the tax increases, and that's middle class. The second thing is they're going to tack on extra monies to for what supposedly we call the rich, people making over a quarter of a million. But that's small businesses, 75% of those. So we are, in fact, going to be taxing the very people that are supposed to be creating the jobs. And depending on what this health care bill looks like, and I don't think anybody knows what it's going to look like when it comes out.
It changes every day right now.
It changes every day. But it does look like it's going to hit small businesses. So
I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more debate on that tax front over the next year and a half. We can count on that. I want to get some more listeners, if I may. Nashville, Tennessee. Raleigh, you're on the air. Hello, Raleigh. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on. Raleigh, what do you think?
Yes, Tom, I just want to say I wish more people would listen to your show. They could learn more. And I wanted to kind of direct this question to John, I believe. And I was just wanting to ask him, do you see the American job market going into more of a service sector and we're getting away from the manufacturing sector? And the other thing I'm really concerned about, too, is it going to get to the point where they're just going to drive the labor rate down, where before you could come out of high school and get a job and make $80,000 to $100,000 a year? And one other question I wanted to ask John about, too, is, why was it, earlier he was talking about some of the senators and making bad choices, but why come in 2001 when the Bush administration went to Capitol Hill and said, hey, fellas, we need to do something about all these bad loans with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Nothing ever was done.
That's a lot, Raleigh. We appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Let's go first to labor rates in this country and where they're likely to go. John, you're not that optimistic about wages going up. And what about the manufacture versus service versus jobs going abroad picture?
The reality is that the past, which said you can graduate from high school and you can go get a job, you know, making 60, 80, 100,000 a year, that world is pretty much gone. I keep trying to stress to my kids, you got to have more education, more education, more education, more training. The Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, came out and said, we're going to create, their estimates, 15 million jobs over the next 10 years. Now, that's only 125,000 jobs a month, by the way. But that's their baseline scenario. Buried within that report, which I'm surprised that nobody's just not looking at it and going, my God, that's if you want to see a bearish report, this is the government's expectation of new jobs. That's a bearish report.
Mm-hmm.
A third of those 15 million jobs are going to require graduate degrees or more. We're in a brave new world. It's an information age. It's a technology age. My daughter had a baby last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I go to the hospital, and I'm sitting in the waiting room, and all of her friends are sitting there on Twitter and Facebook watching the birth, okay, from Belgium. It was somebody in Belgium that was posting and sending it to the in-laws in Cyprus. I mean, the world's just different. And it's changing. And it's changing so fast. And people just need to become comfortable with it and say, it's going to change. I'm going to change with it. If you expect to be able to go back to where we were, that's probably a false hope. We're going to the new normal. And the new normal is going to be fast-paced change. It's going to be a world where it will be more service-oriented.
Is it a lower standard of living? Is it a lower wage?
Well, it's probably lower wages. I'm not sure it's a lower standard of living. I don't think any of us are going to want to come back 10 years from now to the good old days of 2009, because we're going to have better medicine, better tools, better stuff, better cars. Our standard of living is going to continue to rise because of our increase in productivity and all of the new cool things that are being invented. But So I'm not, you know, thinking that we're going back to, living and, as my parents grew up, had, they grew up with outhouses and in the rural part of the world. We're not going back to that. So it's going to be a better life, but we're going to have to adjust. And there are going to be some people that we're going to have to help. No question about it. I mean,
to make it all work out with unemployment over that period of time, it's hard to even picture. Raleigh, we won't get to everything you've got there. Jonathan in Detroit, Jeremy Siegel says, what about green tech? Maybe that's the way. Maybe that's where the jobs growth is. What do you say?
Well, first of all, you brought up, John brought up something so true, how fast the world is changing. What I see as an academic, the globalization of research, the internet has just enabled research teams from disparate parts of the world to collaborate. My own research actually says that when innovation and discovery and invention is all dependent on the number of good minds you have working on it. And that's one reason why I'm optimistic, because what I see here from my position here in academia is an explosion of good minds working on some of the toughest problems in the world, medical problems, conservation problems, global warming problems, that never had that opportunity before. And I think that this is actually going to bring about these increases in the standard of living that's going to make all of us better off and create jobs into the future. So I'm still going to end here with a very positive note.
How far that future is may be the question. Hard to see through right now, but we're glad to know you both see it out there for us at some point. Have to have you back to watch the signposts along the way. Jeremy Siegel at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. Thank you very much for being with us today, Jeremy.
Thank you, Tom.
And John Malden of Millennium Wave Securities in Dallas. John, thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
We'll do it. Listeners, great to have you with us. Join us again. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.